Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It is Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. Monday and Wednesday, we talk apologetics, theology, explaining and defending and loving the Catholic faith. But on Fridays, we talk about whatever I want to talk about. It's Free for All Friday. And so today, I want to talk about science fiction technology that makes no sense. Now, I'm not talking about a lot of science fiction technology which doesn't make sense because it isn't completely explained. Like if you watch Star Trek, for example, they'll talk about, you know, they have the replicator that can make any kind of food you want, the transporters, the warp drive. And like on Star Trek Next Generation, Geordi LaForge, played by LeVar Burton from Reading Rainbow, will spout all this technobabble that doesn't actually make any sense. It's just nonsense. But a lot of science fiction, things that are called science fiction, it can be hard a little bit to distinguish it from fantasy, right? Like take Star Wars, for example. The Jedi are space wizards. The Force is magic. It's really similar to a fantasy genre, more so than straight science fiction. And some people will call Star Wars that. But even in other kinds of science fiction, it can get very fanciful in that regard. But what is supposed to make science fiction different than fantasy is the science part, or that there is at least some elements to it that are realistic. Honestly, one of my favorite pieces of science fiction film, I would say, in recent years, is The Martian. I want to say is Matt Damon, based on a novel. It's about a scientist who is marooned on, you know, there's a Mars manned mission. He gets marooned there, and he has to survive there until a rescue party can meet him. So it's fiction. We haven't made it to Mars yet, but it's very realistic. And so I like that. It's interesting. But there's a lot of devices in science fiction that you think, oh yeah, that would make sense. Why don't we have that by now? That if you thought about it a little more, actually, we can't have it for oftentimes practical reasons, or we do have it and we don't really want it anymore. So the first one would be flying cars. Right? My first exposure to flying cars in science fiction would be the Jetsons. But if you go to a lot of other science fiction, especially cyberpunk, we talked about that a few weeks ago, the dingy, urban, futuristic landscape that has all these super tall skyscrapers, in between them, you have these flying cars. A famous example of that would be The Fifth Element. I want to say that was, 1998, starring Bruce Willis. It's an awesome movie. And you know, you have, I remember these scenes, you know, where they're chasing people and they're falling off of these cars. And also, what would it be? Star Wars Episode 2 has that on the planet of Coruscant. You have the flying cars. The idea is that in these cities of flying cars, the cars behave like regular cars, but it's stacked three-dimensionally. So instead of just one level at the street, you can have like multiple levels going up into the sky of flying cars. And already, if you start to think about flying cars, the allure wears off, because when you think about having a flying car and how awesome that would be, you only ever think about you having a flying car. You're the only one who has one, and you leave your house and you go somewhere and you come back and nobody else has one. Because once other people have flying cars, that's when you start getting into trouble. Because technically, we already have flying cars right now. We have helicopters. We have something you could park on your property, vertical takeoff and landing. It still needs a large landing pad in order to work, that's free of obstacles. But you can do a vertical takeoff, land at another place. You could, you know, take off from your house in the suburbs, fly your helicopter down to the city, land on the top of the skyscraper you work at, and go in. And maybe if you're a super rich person who's really good at flying, or you have your own pilot, you can do that. But for most regular people, flying a helicopter is really difficult. Now imagine if all of us were doing that, all the chaos that would be involved, because flying a plane or a helicopter, you have to register flight plans. You have to be aware of hazards when you're flying, of weather. Like driving a car, if the weather becomes inclement, you have inclement weather, bad weather, the worst thing you have to do is you pull off to the side of the road. You just pull off to the side of the road, you wait it out. But a lot of times you can drive in pretty crummy weather. You just drive really slowly. You can't really do that if you suddenly get zero visibility conditions in your flying car. And actually, we do have flying cars that are not just helicopters. They have these little sports cars that have wings that come out. They have prototypes of that. So you may have a flying car like that, but it wouldn't be a flying car. It would be a driving plane. That's what it would be. It'd be a driving plane. It'd be a little plane. And there's people, you can get your civilian pilot's license. It's not that hard. But the thing, there's a lot of things you have to think about with flying cars. You don't think about regular cars. For example, let's say you successfully get to where you need to go and you're driving your car around and you get into a fender bender. Usually that's just a pain. I've had that happen to me. Your fender's a little bent. Oh, well, you drive home. You can't do that on a plane. If your flap is bent, it's not going to work properly and you're going to crash, or it's not going to take off at all. And you could be stranded somewhere. But even if you don't damage it, trying to get anywhere with a flying car, think about it. Unless it's basically a helicopter, there is no technology that we can just have this awesome vertical takeoff and landing with repulsors or something. The flying cars you would get would be like planes. So you would need a runway. And then if it was nighttime, you'd need an illuminated runway. And you'd have to learn how to fly with instruments, because it's nighttime and you can't see the horizon, you'll be disoriented and you'll crash unless you know how to read your instrument panel in front of you. Suddenly, flying cars don't seem to be as fun, because if it's a short distance, like 10 minutes or 15 minutes, I don't want to go through the hassle. And I don't want to sit in my weird flying car for 5 hours to try to get somewhere. But for longer distances, a much better thing would be like a high-speed train or something like that. And there are cities that have good public transit with that design. We don't have them in America, so we're just kind of stuck with our cars. Before we're probably never going to have self-driving cars because of all the hassle and the danger. Think about these death machines flying above you that at any second could just crash into your office building, have a mid-air collision, fall onto a roadway. It would just be a nightmare to have these things zipping around, knowing that people have been drinking, or people aren't the best drivers now. Now imagine they can fly above you. No, thank you. So flying cars, we're not going to have that. The closest we might get is self-driving cars. And honestly, 10 to 20 years, even like 10 years, I think, we will have self-driving semi-trucks. But I think in 10 years, we will have self-driving semis, but this is what they will do. They won't drive the whole way. You'll set the semi to drive by itself on a program on a freeway from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. Because normally a truck driver has to take a break. He has to sleep at a truck stop. What if he could just sleep in the cab of his truck, sets the truck to go 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. on the freeway, and computers can drive on freeways. That's pretty easy. You don't have to stop. You follow the lane lines. That's not too bad. If there's a problem, you just slow down. The truck automatically disengages. But also it's easier because from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m., there's basically nobody on the freeway anyways. And if you did that, inner domestic shipping via semi would become a third more efficient, because now you get 7 more hours of, six or 7 more hours of driving in if the truck does that, because, human drivers have to take a break. That's what I think we would get to first with all that. All right, here's the next one that you see in science fiction. Giant robots. Giant robots are awesome. I first fell in love with giant robots, of course, when I saw the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers as a kid, and all the Rangers would get in their vehicles. And the vehicles would come together to create a Zord, the Mega Zord, this giant robot. Because if the Power Rangers fought a bad guy, what always happened is they'd fight him, and then the bad guy would become as tall as a skyscraper. So they would get their Zords, the Zords would come together, and they'd make the Mega Zord, and they would fight him. Now, as a little kid, a little 7-year-old, watching Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, I did not know that all the scenes with the Zords and the Power Rangers in their costumes were filmed in Japan. They were another television show entirely, and Saban or whatever the company here, all they had to do was just film scenes with American teenagers, with asterisks. I'm sure they weren't real teenagers. Well, who knows? Film them and doing their teen drama and that kind of stuff, and then just splice in the footage from the Japanese show, and boom, you've got a show there. So those giant robots, a more recent example would be Pacific Rim. So Pacific Rim by Guillermo del Toro. I wonder if he did the sequel. Maybe. I know he did the original one back in 2013, which is a very fun movie. What is Pacific Rim about? So giant monsters are sent by aliens to invade the Earth through a interdimensional rift in the Pacific Ocean. I think it's like in the Marianas Trench or something. And so these giant monsters are basically like Godzilla. They're called Kaiju, the Japanese name, I guess, for them, monsters. Kaiju. And so the nations of the world decide the best way to fight these giant monsters the size of skyscrapers, we built monsters of our own, is to build giant robots to fight them. We're called Jaegers. Jaeger is a German word for hunter. And the movie, what is the movie? The movie is about giant robots fighting giant monsters. And your inner 10-year-old boy loves it. It's so fun. It's a dumb movie, but it's a fun dumb movie. So I do recommend it in that respect. But it is hopelessly unrealistic to have giant robots. I'm talking about huge robots, things that are like 100 feet tall, 200 feet tall in these films. Why is that? Well, it's because of a little thing called the square cube law, all right? So here's an article from AustralasianScience.com, which talks about this. It says, the biggest and heaviest creatures to ever walk on land were dinosaurs. The largest sauropods, like Argentinosaurus, weighed about 50 tons. And the ocean's blue whales beat even dinosaurs. They weigh about 200 tons. But nothing has evolved that we know of that comes close to the size of the kaiju in Pacific Rim. We haven't built agile humanoid-like systems anywhere near as big as the Jaegers either. One of the key reasons, the square cube law. The law captures how the weight and volume of objects changes as you make them bigger. It says that doubling the size of an object in all three dimensions causes the volume to go up 8 times. So the problem is you can't just take something and to make it bigger, you can't keep the proportions the same because it wouldn't be able to stand. Its volume dramatically increases more than just doubling the area or the dimensions of it. And so this increases the weight, the density. So as things get bigger, their body sizes change, right? So, you know, you could never have a cat as big as an elephant. It wouldn't look like a cat. It wouldn't act like a cat. That's why in order for an elephant to be as big as it is, it has to have these long, I'm sorry, not long, it has to have these big, thick, stocky legs to be able to keep it up. So then if you keep trying to scale it up more and more and more, the dimensions have to change so much so that the legs become impossibly thick and stocky, that it wouldn't even be able to walk at all. So it goes on, so it says, if an animal is scaled up in all dimensions by a factor of 2, its volume and mass go up by a factor of 8, but the cross-sectional area of its muscles and bones, say the muscles in its legs, only goes up by 4 times. So whether it's an animal or it's a robot, like if you keep trying to scale a robot up, you can't keep the same size dimension. You can't keep the same form. You would have to retrofit it and do a different design because as the volume is increasing, its size, its density. Fact of the matter is it won't work. You can't just take your favorite robot action figure and then duplicate the size and expect to make it with the same physics. It just won't work. So no, we will not have giant robots. And there's so many other reasons why you wouldn't fight giant animals with the giant robots in Pacific Rim. They try to say, well, they used a nuclear missile the first time. They're worried about radioactive fallout. So they'd rather just put a nuclear reactor in a giant robot and have the robot punch the monster. But ultimately, the plan is dumb because at some point in the movie later, they're able to kill a kaiju. The robot, the Jaeger, one of the Jaegers, I think it's Gypsy Danger, pulls out a retractable sword and it cuts a kaiju in half. Or it has plasma cannons on it that it fires to kill the kaiju. Now, one wonders, we know where the kaijus are coming from. It's from this interdimensional rift in the Pacific Ocean. They come from the same place every time. You could just install a bunch of swinging swords and plasma cannons at the rift underwater to be able to kill any kaiju that comes through it. So that's just my minor nitpick of Pacific Rim. But yeah, we're not going to have Jaegers. We're not going to have giant skyscraper-sized robots. You can thank physics, specifically the square cube law, for that. All right, number 3 are floating displays. Now we've got something that, practically speaking, we could probably come up with. You think about a Minority Report or any kind of science fiction, you have this semi-translucent display. You put your fingers on it, and you're standing there, and you're swishing things around. This would be a nightmare to work on. It would be an absolute nightmare to work on. It looks cool in a movie, but it'd be awful in real life, and I'll tell you why. Imagine you're looking at your laptop right now and you're trying to work. Now imagine your laptop has a translucent screen and you can see everything kind of behind it. Your keys, I'd see a wire right here, the back of my computer, my camera tripod. My eyes would go crazy trying to focus on this semi-transparent thing. And that's just looking at the screen and using a keyboard. If I was actually moving my hands around, oh, I mean, a standing desk is bad enough as it is. I tried a standing desk. I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I know there's like a cult of the standing desk, but it was tiring, and I felt like it didn't really improve my health at all that much. So that's just my take on the floating displays. You always see them in science fiction. They're bad for your eyes. You'd be tired. It's basically a glorified standing desk where you strain your eyes. That's not something we're going to have. All right, here's number 4 sci-fi tech we're not going to have. The lightsaber. Now, the lightsaber is cool. Whenever you're a kid and you first saw Star Wars, you thought that was awesome. And I still think they'd make a cool sound, though in real life, if they were supercharged plasma, anytime you struck the lightsabers, it'd sound like thunder and it would be really, really loud. It would be, So many things wrong with lightsabers. Supposed to be the supercharged energy, whatever it is, can cut through basically anything, right? But the lightsaber is a ridiculously impractical weapon that can only work in Star Wars because Star Wars is a fantasy genre. It's not so much science fiction because the lightsaber is only a good weapon if it's wielded by a space wizard that can use it to do ridiculous things. So, I mean, because think about it. Yeah, it's a sword that can cut through anything. That's awesome. You know what's better than a sword that can cut through anything? A gun that shoots bullets. Well, yeah, I could use the lightsaber to deflect the bullets. In Star Wars, the only thing they deflect are blaster rifles. They can deflect blaster shots. I don't know if it can deflect a solid projectile object. Even if it could, it seems like when cannons are fired at the Jedi, you can't deflect a cannon blast with a lightsaber. And then, of course, the problem there is the lightsaber can only deflect one blast coming out at a time. If you have a shotgun-type weapon that fires multiple beams at someone, you can't deflect them all. But even so, there's so many things wrong with it. Like, you know, we move beyond swords. Because you want to be farther away from your enemy when you're engaging them. Now you might say, well, the Jedi are defensive. That's why they don't want to engage people. They're defensive. They're not trying to attack people. Okay, fine. Here's more problems with it though. I wonder how does the lightsaber cap? Like it's shooting out this light, but it stops after like 4 feet. But what's stopping it? That's not really explained. Why doesn't the lightsaber produce massive amounts of heat? If it cuts through anything, you can hold it. Like, it can cauterize a wound instantly by cutting your arm off. But you can be, like, an inch away from it and it doesn't burn your face at all. So what's controlling that radiant heat so that it's contained only within that direct area of the lightsaber itself? There's other things that are problematic about the lightsaber. You know, some people use it. The hilt of the sword, it doesn't seem to have a safety. Like, if you just accidentally press the button, this 4-foot death beam comes out that can cut through anything. Like, imagine if you had a gun. I mean, it's kind of like a revolver. Revolvers scare me. That just, if you just lightly touched it, it would fire. Like, that's why we say a gun with a hair trigger is dangerous. That's why guns have safeties on them. If you just grabbed a gun and it could just go off because you accidentally touched the wrong button, well, that's scary, but lightsabers don't have safeties on them. There's no way to practice also with a lightsaber. Like, you might say, well, they're Jedis, blah, 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 they have the Force. Fine, now you're going into fantasy, this is not... You might as well take any weapon, because there's also Jedi who seem to do quite well. Like, remember when Yoda is fighting Count Dooku, and they're fighting, they're not using... We're both equal with a... Now we'll see who can fight with a lightsaber. But before that, they're shooting projectiles, deflecting them, using the Force to move objects. You know, it seems like you could do a lot, it wouldn't matter the weapon if you have the Force on your side. But obviously someone who doesn't, even if they have the Force, they have to learn and train with this. They have to train with this weapon and learn it. But you can't really train with a lightsaber. You know, when swordsmen actually train in real life, they use blunted versions or plastic versions of their instrument. But even with a real steel sword, you can still practice and, you know, not necessarily cause a fatal injury, especially if you have armor and you have other things that you're working on to practice with it. You can't do that with a lightsaber. And that comes to the most irresponsible thing in the entire Star Wars franchise. That would be in Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, and it's such a dopey scene anyways, when Anakin goes to Yoda asking where this system is, and Yoda asks the younglings will tell us. And the cutesy youngling tells him it's not on the map. So the younglings are there practicing with lightsabers, deflecting blaster bolts. Those kids must be like, what, 6, 7? I would never let I take away things that vaguely resemble swords from my kids. I would never let a 7-year-old have a laser sword. There's an article I read online here that makes this point really well. It says, you really have to wonder about the Jedi here. A lightsaber is a deadly weapon, as evidenced numerous times in the films. A regular duelist requires a long time practicing with plastic swords before moving to the real thing. Yet in Episode 2, I guess it's Episode 2, I thought it was 3, we see little kids, none older than 10, wielding actual lightsabers in practice. They barely seem to know what they're doing. You can't give a kid that age a plastic straw without risking them sticking themselves with it. So giving them a lightsaber is just insane. And I have to agree with that. So overall, the lightsaber... it doesn't make sense as a weapon. It's cool, but it doesn't make sense. Two more. Number 5, video cell phones. Now, these we do have. Like, this is something science fiction predicted a while ago, you know, you have a little, the cell phone or the video cell phone. You have the little communicator on Star Trek. You have the communicators with video screen options. The idea of the video cell phone. This has been in science fiction for a while, even long before we had the iPhone, before we had the ability to do FaceTime. And it was seen as the cool thing. And in a lot of science fiction movies, whenever somebody calls you, you always see a video of them. But so we have that. That is something that is now feasible. You could take every phone call as a FaceTime if you wanted to, but you don't because it's annoying. It's annoying. Like, it's fine answering the phone when you're disheveled. You haven't put yourself together in the morning. You haven't showered, haven't put on makeup, and you just want to talk to the person. That's fine. Maybe you haven't decided to get out of bed that morning, or whatever it may be. You can hide that, but not everybody does not want to be immediately present on camera to a person who is a stranger. And think about all the phone calls that are like telemarketers and random people. You don't want them to see you. So even if we could have video calls for all of our communications, we wouldn't want that because it's supremely annoying. Nobody wants to do that. Maybe we can talk by audio. You can hear our voice. That's fine. But I want a little bit of privacy. So that's one we actually could. We've actually managed to catch up with that one in real life. But we don't want it. All right, so that was video cell phones. I had a number six, actually, originally. That was just time machines. But I think I could just do a whole episode. I have talked about it before. Time machines, look, they're paradoxes no matter which way you do it. The only time machine that works is if you leave from the present and go into the future and you don't go anywhere else. You can do that. People do that all the time if they're traveling really, really fast. Astronauts do that. The theory of relativity, time moves slower for them, you know, to go into the future. Or if you cryogenically preserve yourself, going to the future is generally okay. There's not really paradoxes there. So, well, into the future is a one-way trip because we're all doing that. We're all going to the future. You just go there in a different speed than other people. Going to the past, nada. But I'll have to save that for another episode. All righty. Well, I hope that was helpful for you guys. Hope you enjoyed it. And yeah, I just hope you have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.